Hey, welcome everybody to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera, your host. We're here on KVOI 1030. And I'm glad to say that we have a great guest right away. One of my good longtime friends, Pat Darcy, a guy who's been on the radio before. He's better at this than me. Thankfully, he's here. He'll spend the next hour or so. We'll be talking about a lot of different things, you know, his commercial business, commercial real estate business. He's working at the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame. He's the former Major League Baseball player. I used to be a big Cincinnati Red fan growing up. So we'll talk about that. That's what, one of the reasons why I have him in. And we'll talk a little politics. How are you, Pat?
Doing fine, Steve.
Good. Great to see you.
Likewise.
Yeah. I haven't seen you in a long time, but I know you're a busy guy. You're doing a lot of different things. What's kind of bringing the most enjoyment to your life right now?
Right now it'd be the Pima County Sports Hall of Fame. Doing that, I was on board Tucson Metropolitan Ministries, and of course I'm working, and so a lot going on right now. But you know, it's fun, and having fun out there. And the Pima County Hall of Fame, you know, getting to meet people that, you know, I knew who they were a little bit, didn't know them, that have been involved in sports in Tucson for many, many years. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty cool. You know, we had a really good class last year, so hopefully. They keep Greg Hansen's on our selection committee. He keeps bringing up names to me, and you think, "Oh man, I thought before we run out of names, we're not. We got a ton of them out there."
Sure, sure. No, if there's a guy in tune, it's Greg. He knows a lot of people in this town, obviously. Where do you want to start? Let's start with my fantasy is the Cincinnati Reds. Back when I was a little kid, you grew up in Tucson.
Yes.
After moving from Ohio, I think it was.
Yeah, I was 4 years old when we came out here.
So
yeah.
Tucson's your home.
Yes.
It's always been your home. Mm-hmm. And your love for this place is well documented. How difficult was it playing at the high school level here and then finding your way or getting noticed to eventually get signed, by the Houston Astros, I think it was.
Yes. Yeah. It was interesting. I was an outfielder and pitcher at Rincon. Played outfield. I didn't pitch at all my junior year. I played outfield. Mm-hmm. So, I was playing on a semi-pro team. I was thinking about going after Jim Brock was at Mesa Community College. He had talked to me a little bit, and I had also visited Eastern Arizona. There were a lot of JCs back then. So I was thinking I'll go to Eastern Arizona because the guy said you can pitch and play outfield, and Brock should just be a pitcher, you know. So I was thinking of going there. Well, I was playing on a semi-pro team, and for some reason our coach scheduled a game up in Phoenix. And I didn't realize there was a team made up of Phoenix College guys. So I was pitching that game. It was a night game up in Phoenix. It's a regular city park.
You're 17, 18 years old?
I was 18 years old. Mm-hmm. I just turned 18. So I'm pitching up there, and between the innings, I went out, the drinking fountain was outside the dugout. And so I went out there, was drinking some water, and I noticed there's a guy standing on the other side of the drinking fountain. So I raised up, and he looks at me and goes, "Who the heck are you?" And I said, "What?" He says, "Where'd you go to school?" And I said, "Rincon." He said, "What's your name?" And I told him, he says, "Well, I'm a scout for the Houston Astros." And he was over there having dinner with his in-laws across the street, lived near the park. He just walked over to see the game.
Well, and isn't so that happenstance?
How oh, man. And so that just changed. I would have gone to Eastern and played outfield pitcher. So after that happened, from that moment on, scouts started calling me, and I followed me all through, you know, went to my fall ball at Mesa, then playing for Jim Brock. So mm-hmm. And then I signed after that. I signed up my first year at Mesa.
Mm-hmm. How was it? I think you – what was the first signing bonus?
I was 28.5.
$28,500. Yeah, yeah. I bet back in the day, I'm sure that was like, wow.
It was like a second round pick, something like that.
But I'm sure that was a lot of money back then.
Yeah, it was.
So what did you buy with your first check?
I bought a car.
Everybody does it. Everybody does it, even in 1969.
My dad got it for me. I played rookie league up with Houston. I came back home, but I was playing. I went to going to school at Mesa still, and they had an instructional league up in Phoenix.
Yeah.
So my dad said, "I got a car for you." What is it? A 67 Camaro.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
And I said, "I don't want a convertible." Well, now I still have, it's worth a ton of money right now.
Do you still have it?
I still have it, yeah.
Wow. That's cool. Do you have it on Facebook? You have it on Facebook or no?
I don't have the car on Facebook. I'm on Facebook, yeah.
Yeah. But I want to see the car. So is it kind of still nice? Do you have it nice?
Well, it hasn't been driven in a long time.
Yeah.
But it's got like 58,000 miles on it.
Wow. It's still kind of nice.
I gave it to my dad afterwards when I got another car. And then he drove it, and then I haven't driven out quite a while now.
Wow, very cool. Very cool to have your first car. And as a Camaro, mine was a Camaro 84-ish.
Yeah.
So, a few years later, mm-hmm. I loved it. So then you went with the Astros for 4 or 5 years?
Yes, I came up through the organization, and I played, A-ball, AA, and AAA, moved up through there. And then right before, so I was on the Major League roster with the Astros. I'd been there for a couple of years on the Major League roster. And I got traded a couple of days before spring training to Cincinnati for Dennis Mincke, who'd been the starting third baseman. And they were going to bring Danny Dreesen in to play third base like that. So I got traded. I got traded there, and it was totally different. Houston, every team I finished played on, Houston finished last place. And Houston's philosophy was, we're gonna stick with you guys. We're just gonna develop you.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati's was, we want to win no matter where we're at.
Right.
And so when you're on a losing team, everybody knows what it's like when you're losing. You're always wondering what's gonna happen. Something bad's gonna happen. What's
sure.
gonna happen? And sure enough, somebody kick a ground ball, or whatever, and all of a sudden they'd have an inning or something like that. So. And then I came over to Cincinnati, and everybody expects to win all the time. You know?
Well, they had the players to do it.
Yeah,
because
they
back then, they had, you know, Johnny Bench and Pete Rose, obviously, guys that you were played with.
Yeah.
Probably the best team you've ever played with.
Oh, definitely. Our AAA team was really good. We had our AAA team. We had Dave Revering, who played for the Oakland A's. Junior Kenny played for the Cubs and the Giants. Doug Flynn played shortstop. He played for the Mets and the Expos. And Ray Knight played third base. We had Ken Griffey in the outfield, Joe Youngblood in the outfield, Eddie Armbrister.
Wow.
And our bullpen was our two closer, McEnany Eastwick. And then we had Santo Alcala on the team, Joaquin Andujar on the team.
Wow.
So we had Pat Zachary. We had a really good team, yeah.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You played, so 74, 75, 76?
Yeah.
74 with the major leagues?
Yeah, in 70, I was up on the roster in 76. I hurt my shoulder. And back then, sports medicine wasn't
in 70s after 76.
I hurt my shoulder in 73 when I was in AAA, and I had tear in my labrum. And so I remember I was in Denver, and I saw the Broncos team position. Oh, you're not gonna. I don't think I'll play again. And so I was out about a month. I came back and played, but it still bothered me off and on. And then I hurt the front of my shoulder too. It tore something like my front of my shoulder. So that was kind of in sports medicine. That was. There was really no sports medicine back then.
Right, right. Hey, I'm just talking to Pat Darcy here. If you'd like to call in, 790-2040. Great talking and reminiscing about the good old days with Pat. You were like 22-ish, 23-ish back then, 25?
My first year, 24.
24 with the Astros. So you went from the Astros, who didn't win a lot, to Cincinnati when it was, hey, you win or else. So how was that different in terms of pressure? Because you were a young kid pitching, I think you did really well.
Yeah, it was interesting. We had veterans on our team, so most of these guys have been through the World Series.
Sure,
you know, they played against Baltimore and Oakland in the World Series. You know, Rose, Perez, Billingham, all these guys have been around for a while, so that really helped out. It was a veteran team, except for a few young guys. It was pretty much set. You know, the lineup was pretty much set there. So when you're with a bunch of veterans, you kind of they don't get excited that much. Things are they don't worry about everything okay. So it wasn't like a big deal because they didn't make it a big deal.
Right, right. So then you pitch in 75, a great year, great team, get to the World Series, obviously. And I think I was 11 at the time. And who doesn't remember that series? To me, it's still the best series that I can recall. And I was 11 years old, like I say, maybe the Diamondbacks in 2001. We all remember that. And then you're in it. You're the big dude in it trying to get the out.
Yeah. I told you about it. It was interesting how baseball's changed so much. Back then, in 75, our first two games were in Boston. We play them. We split the series there. We go back to Cincinnati, win two out of three. Mm-hmm. So we go back to Boston, and we come in on a Friday. We practice. Well, Saturday it rained, so the game got called. Everybody just, after the game was rained out, everybody just left. You know, there was no working out, no stretching.
Sure.
Everybody, not even guys got coming. Went to the park. So then Sunday it gets rained out again. So we take a bus to Tufts University. This is Sunday morning, around 11:30, something like that. And so the bus driver gets lost. So everybody's got their uniform. Or Sparky gets off the bus at this gas station. It's pretty crowded, and he walks up to the front office there, and everybody's just stopping, like, "What's going on around here? What the heck?" And is that really Sparky Anderson?
Sure.
So we go to Tufts University. There's no security. There's a field house there. We're in the field house practicing, and the students start coming. They hear we're there. They start. So they're coming in inside the facility with us. You know.
Yeah.
So you're like 5 feet away from a student, and you're playing catch and throw and stuff like that. I mean, it was amazing that there's no way they would have something like that by happening today. Then we got rained out on Monday without doing anything. We didn't do anything. We didn't go to the park.
I don't even remember any of that, obviously, because we were just concerned with the games.
Yeah, we had Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Well, Friday was no game, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, there was nothing.
Yeah. Were you the schedule you started that game, or did you just come in
relief? I came in relief that game,
Because you were a starter by trade.
Right, yeah.
You came into relief, so you were ready to go, obviously, after all those days' rest.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a long rest, too.
Sure. And that's changed, too, the way things are held with pitchers and pitches, count, and all that.
They'd be working out, stretching, all sorts of stuff like that. So we didn't do any of that stuff.
Really. So go back. How much time do we have, Bob? I think we have a few minutes here. 1 minute before we go to break. So I want to hear this great story. So you're in the one of the biggest moments in sports history. Mm-hmm. How much pressure was it to get Carlton Fisk out?
Well, I didn't think – we were ahead 6-3 in the game. Mm-hmm. It was the bottom of the eighth inning, two outs. We had three – Raleigh Eastwick was pitching. He's our club. So I've always been a starter. So I'm, you're not starting that game in the bullpen. So I'm out sitting in the bullpen out by right field. And I'm thinking, man, this is pretty cool. We're going to win the World Series. We're at 6-3, two outs. Bernie Carbo's hitting.
Sure.
He's taking some bad swings. And so the next thing happens, he hits a home run over the center field wall. The place goes nuts. It was a three-run homer.
Sure.
So now it's 6-6. So I'm thinking, we're going to win this thing. Next thing, I could be in this game, So I get up. They have me go warming up, and I went in the 10th inning. Mm-hmm. So I came out of the 10th inning, and the first guy I faced was Dwight Evans. And I made this play, probably the best player made in my life. The only time I saw it was back, MLB had the greatest games ever, and they flew us back to New York for that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they showed it. That's the first time I'd really seen it, And so he had a hard hit ground ball back to me. I knocked it down. It went over by the first baseline. So by the time I got the ball, he was by me. And all I could see was Tony's glove sticking out. And I threw it about hard as I could, and I hit him right in the glove.
And you got him.
I got him. It probably would have been if I hit him. It probably would have been, base runner interference, something like that. But you're not thinking that.
Sure.
And
sure.
So I made the play, and I'm going back, man, I made a good play. Well, Joe Morgan then comes in from around. He comes over from second base, runs by me, and said, "You just made a great play in the World Series." And went back to his position. So we're watching it with Costa, these guys on the show. And I'm thinking, I know he came in. And a little while, then he runs. You can see him. He runs in and just runs right by him and goes back to second base.
Sure. And he was, all of 5'6", probably.
Yeah.
So then who's number two better?
That was my first hitter, I think, was Carbo might have been. I think it was Carbo, Evans, I forget. And then I faced the next three guys, got them out. And then Fisk led off the bottom of the 12th. Mm-hmm. But that was also where – they had in the 11th, they had a runner on third base, and there's a short. You ever been to Fenway Park?
No.
It's really short to left.
Sure.
Field. I mean, it's right
sure.
on top of you.
Sure.
And somebody hit a little fly ball to left field. And the left fielder came over, George Foster came over, and the coach was telling Denny Doyle, who's at third base, no. Doyle said he thought he would say go. So it wasn't deep, and Foster threw him out by about three or four steps.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of – so I thought, man, we got out of that, Raleigh got out of that thing. So McEnany was pitching then. So then after I was pitching, I'm thinking, how are we going to get this – we're going to win this thing, hopefully. But they kept going back and forth like that. So then Fisk hit the home run off the foul pole after the second pitch.
Right. How was it – I can still see your picture. Let's go to break. Is that what we're going to do? Let's go to break. We're in your new studios now. I know people may have seen it on Facebook, but we're on new studios, so we're kind of playing it by ear. We'll go to a break and come back on the other side and talk about the Carlton Fisk homer.
And open all the shades in your room from the comfort of your bed? Or sit back on your sofa, put on a movie, and close the shades with the touch of a button? Sound like a luxury only for the elite? Not anymore. Now you can save big during Budget Blinds motorization event. Enjoy the luxury and ease of motorized window coverings now at amazing savings from Budget Blinds.
Call locally owned Budget Blinds in Tucson at 790-6180.
The Tucson Symphony Orchestra is proud to present Kristen Chenoweth. Don't miss this Tony, Emmy, and People's Choice Award winner as she performs music spanning her Broadway, film, and television careers. From Wicked and You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, to her featured roles in television's Glee and Pushing Daisies, Kristen Chenoweth's amazing operatic voice and seductive charm have enthralled audiences on stage and screen alike. The New York Daily News calls it a whole lot of wonderful, just like Chenoweth. Reserve your tickets now for this one-night-only event. Kristen Chenoweth in concert with the Tucson Symphony Orchestra. Thursday, January 17th at 7:30 in the Tucson Music Hall. Brought to you in partnership with the Tucson Desert Song Festival. Tickets at 882-8585 or tucsonsymphony.org.
Tucson's diversity is celebrated in Mark Bishop's Morning Affair from 10 a.m. to noon on KVOI AM 1030, trusted local news and talk. Reliable and timely financial information from Bloomberg Radio Network, 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. on KVOI AM 1030, trusted local news and talk.
Hello, I'm Ed Begley, Jr., and wherever you call home, the sounds of wildlife connect you with a greater family of life. That's why you shudder each time you see woods, marshes, meadows, or grasslands being destroyed. You know that countless birds and other wild animals are losing their homes, the greatest threat to their survival. Among the growing number of threats to wildlife, habitat loss is the most devastating. The Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust offers a humane solution, working with private landowners to protect habitat as permanent safe havens for wildlife. When you hear the familiar wild voices you love, remember, your voice is the one that can speak for wildlife and for the land they call home, ensuring that it stays forever wild. To learn more or to work with the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust, visit wildlifelandtrust.org.
Trusted local news and talk. AM 1030 KVOI. We have our eye on business.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 KVOI. I'm here with Pat Darcy, the former Major League Baseball player and commercial real estate guy now, Pima County Hall of Fame, Sports Hall of Fame. So we're in the 12th inning, correct?
Yeah.
You're on the mound, and the big Carlton Fisk is on at the plate. What are you thinking? I got to get out of this.
Well, I'm thinking when I go into pitch, I was a starter,
right.
And I'm thinking just don't walk anybody. And so you know when you're pitching like that, you know we're the visiting team. I give a run, the game's over.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're going all out. You're not pacing yourself. If he has a starter, you know, work my breaking pitch in or something like that.
Sure.
It's just like, just don't let anybody get on base. So first pitch with the ball. Next pitch, you had a high pop fly. And the wind was blowing, like it was blowing from left field to right field.
Mm-hmm.
It was like blowing. And he was trying to, like, you know, wave his arms like that. But just kind of hung up in the air, hit the foul pole. And George Foster caught it off the foul. When it hit the foul pole, bounced back to George Foster. And I didn't realize, but back in the – I think it was back in the early 2000s, George sold the ball.
Oh, really?
Like $100,000
really?
Or something like
that. Yeah.
I'm thinking, George, how do they know that was a ball? You know? So, how are they supposed to know that was
very
a ball?
Very smart
there?
Man.
Yeah,
very smart.
How many of those balls you got now? So then that won the game, and then we came back and won the next day.
Right. No. In today's world, you would have been let's say a couple of things. That was your third inning pitching.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That would have never happened today.
Yeah.
Because pitchers going for either face one hitter, or face maybe three hitters in an inning, and they're gone.
Yeah.
Now you were there for three innings.
Yeah, we only had 10 pitchers on our staff.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have 13, 14 on the staff.
And worry about pitch count and things like that. What are your thoughts on all that?
You know, I think that they get carried away with the pitch count stuff, and I think they get carried away with the speed, how hard someone throws. You know, it's more movement than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that, you know, these pitchers, they go, you know, you go five innings, you've done a great job, and they, somebody else comes in, somebody else gets.
Sure.
It's too much computer generated, you know. There's
analytics.
The manager has a, you know, gut feeling, I got to take him out here to leave him in or something like that.
Sure.
That's changed a lot, yeah.
Sure. Okay, so then you lose game six, you walk off the mound, go into the locker room, and how many people are talking to you?
Not that many. No, I mean, the players, you know, everybody, we went in the locker room. This is because of a veteran team. So we're in the locker room, and Pete Rose is saying, you know, that's the best game I've ever seen. This is the best game ever. And guys, you're talking, what a great game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what everybody was talking about in the clubhouse,
sure,
you know?
Sure.
And they had these really, Raleigh Neeswick was a friend of mine, a teammate of mine, and they had these really good ice cream sandwiches. Raleigh's going, where are the ice cream sandwiches? That's really...
that was the biggest question
so
of the night.
It wasn't like, oh, my God, it went like that at all. Went, yeah, that was a great game. What a great game. It was like, man, we played one of the greatest games I ever played.
That wasn't deep into the night, too, because I know it was late where I was.
Yeah.
12 o'clock, 1 o'clock?
But just think, you know, you got Pete and you know, Pete and Joe, all these guys who played so many games.
Yeah.
And they're saying, this is the best game ever.
Right. No, it was. So you go into the locker room. In today's world, at the World Series, you're facing 50 reporters with all these type of questions, cameras and questions. You had two or three?
No, I don't even think, I don't know if anybody came in, came in our locker room then.
Wow.
Because they had a few you could go out, you know, and they'd interview, something like that.
Yeah.
But that was, I think, I don't know, Pete went out for a little bit or something like that. Things have just really changed since. The whole thing's changed.
True, true. Yeah. And you lost the game. It would have been like Steve Bartman. You know how Steve Bartman got interfered? It was interference. Yeah, yeah. Became this big story in Chicago. Because you won the next game, Pat Darcy was just a footnote on the World Series. Don't you think?
I think, Raleigh thinks he was. He gave up the three-run homer. He said, man, that kind of ruined everything.
Oh, yeah. That's true, because he gave up the homer.
That was the bottom of the ninth, I think it was.
Oh, okay. Homer. Okay. And then a year later, you guys roll it again.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys were a dynamite in 76.
Yeah. And then we started. It was the Frisian kind of started there. Don Gullett didn't sign, and I don't think he signed his 76 contract. And so guys were making much money back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you're seeing guys like the Yankees are starting to pay guys, mm-hmm. the Dodgers. And so everybody's saying, well, wait a second. You know, I'm making my first year, I think I made 18.5.
Wow.
And, you know, Jack Billingham was probably making around 65,000. I mean, if you made 100,000, you're doing really good. Mm-hmm. Pete was right around 100, mm-hmm. a little over 100,000 there.
Sure.
But so you had all these, you know, they just weren't making that much money back then.
And you had some great names back then. Tony Perez, as you mentioned, Joe Morgan, Concepcion.
Yeah.
I'm going just around Pete Rose, Bench.
Griffey,
Geronimo, mm-hmm. and who was, and Foster.
Yeah.
I mean, right there. Holy moly.
Yeah. All, you know. Geronimo was a great outfielder.
Yeah.
He signed as a pitcher with the Yankees.
Oh, his arm. Everyone loved his arm.
Yeah. And the Yankees, that was a big trade. I was with Houston when they made the trade. The Astros and the Reds made a trade where the Astros gave up an all-star second baseman, Joe Morgan. They gave up Jack Billingham,
mm-hmm.
Cesar Geronimo.
Geronimo,
they gave up those guys, and they gave up. They sent to Houston Tommy Helms and Lee May, who are all stars.
Lee May, yeah.
And, you know, and they, Houston's people, Cincinnati's go, what are you doing? How can you make this trade? You can give a reserve outfielder and a long reliever spot starter, Billingham, and Joe Morgan, who's hitting 250.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it? What a terrible trade. And it just turned out completely the other way around.
So you had all these names on this team. Joe Morgan turned out to be one of the smartest baseball guys around. At least that's what the impression was to me.
Yep.
You know, he did this TV work. And I think he was even thought of to be maybe a commissioner back in the day. He didn't become a commissioner.
I think Houston, he had mentioned to me Houston was going to talk to him about being a manager.
Mm-hmm. So you had Morgan, you had Pete, who still you know, loved baseball, baseball all the time. Johnny Bench, who did the two. Smart team.
Yeah. Joe used to take... There wasn't the computers back then.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe had a little notebook with him. After every game, he would write down every pitch that he had thrown at him, what he'd done with all the hit, and he'd have this little notebook with him all the time, writing stuff down.
So he was kind of like the analytics before the analytics was.
Yeah.
You know, these guys pitched this to me, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what baseball kind of is. It's all about tendencies and things like that.
Yeah.
So then you finished, and then 76, you guys breezed through it pretty much. That's what I remember. And then the Dodgers and the Yankees kind of took control after that.
And they got rid of Sparky. And they fired Sparky, and I think about it, McNamara, I think, from the Padres, something like that. They had a new general manager come in. Bob Houser kind of got it up and retired from that. But Sparky was a pretty good manager. You know, think about Sparky is he really controlled the clubhouse.
Sure.
I mean, he had leaders, players that were leaders, like, you know, Billingham, Rose, mm-hmm. Morgan, those guys like that, Bench. And so we had this real strict dress code.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no long hair, no facial hair, no long side like that. Everybody else had long hair back then, or like that. We had to wear these wool socks, red, they wore in the 40s there. And so if you're letting your hair, you know, you're younger, you get your hair grow a little bit, they would be Morgan or Roe. Hey, you need to get your hair cut.
Yeah.
And so, and that's what, and so Sparky's thing was no egos in the clubhouse. I don't care what you like outside the clubhouse. No egos in the clubhouse, and no one person wins a game. No one person loses a game.
And that's how it was.
That's how it was. And it was, he had that clubhouse that was under control.
And you had some personalities on that club.
Oh, yeah.
That clubhouse.
Yeah. Barbone, Pedro Barbone. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Don Gullett, I remember him pitching as well. Let's go to break real quick and come back. We'll talk what happened after 76 to you, and then kind of how you kind of became just Pat Darcy, who you are today.
Yep.
Yeah, great.
Hi, my name is Andrew Reeby, Director of Admissions at Desert Christian Schools, and I would like to invite you to Take Flight Night, our high school admissions event. Take Flight Night is designed for 8th through 12th grade students and their families and will be held Thursday, January 17th from 6 to 8 p.m. Come and meet our faculty, learn about our outstanding academics, and see firsthand how we pursue excellence in Christian education. Desert Christian is a comprehensive preschool through 12th grade ACSI accredited school. To RSVP, visit desertchristian.org.
Where do you turn for Tucson's best business news? Inside Tucson Business has it all. Stories by an award-winning reporting team you won't read anywhere else. Plus columns by community leaders and business professionals. Keep on top of public records and people on the move. ITB has it all. You can get Inside Tucson Business in print and online at InsideTucsonBusiness.com. Inside Tucson Business is produced by Tucson Local Media. Know us, know your community. TucsonLocalMedia.com.
I'm Bernard Buford with the Architecture Company. We have earned the loyalty and respect of our clients by listening to their dreams and creating dazzling designs. Since we have been using Leishanach Network Solutions for routine and automated maintenance on our computers, our downtime has been close to zero. This helps us meet our target dates. We rely on Leishanach to help keep us up and running.
The Architecture Company trusts us with their network, shouldn't you? Call us today at 888-9122. Leishanach Network Solutions, 888-9122.
Reliable and timely financial information from Bloomberg Radio Network, 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. on KVOI AM 1030. Trusted local news and talk. No more knowledgeable woman than Dawn English and her irresistible Tucson food and culture in the Old Pueblo. From 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on KVOI AM 1030. Trusted local news and talk.
Driving means
freedom.
Exploration.
Fun.
Pride.
Flexibility.
Travel.
Protection.
Ability.
Friendship.
Escape.
Independence.
Distracted driving means
danger.
Recklessness.
Irresponsible.
Chaos.
Police.
Devastation.
Injury.
Tears.
Death.
Safe driving means staying alert and staying alive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Trusted local news and talk. AM 1030, KVOI. We have our eye on entertainment.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera, your host. I'm here with Pat Darcy, the former Major League Baseball player, pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds. That's where he became famous, obviously. And then after your career with Cincinnati, you were traded.
Yes.
To St. Louis.
St. Louis for Mike Caldwell.
But there was a problem there because you had already been hurt.
Well, I had hurt earlier on, a couple years before, mm-hmm. and then I hurt my shoulder there after that in spring training, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so that hurt me back, and a couple of starts be okay, then start hurting again, and so I've had two operations after that.
Really?
Yeah.
Shortly
yeah.
after, or even recently?
Well, no, I need one now. I'm not
going to
get.
Do you?
Oh yeah, I'm not going to get one. I don't think so. I'm not going to try out for any team right now.
Well, you know the funny thing about it is I was an intern at the Daily Star in 1985, I think it was. No, I know it was, and I was 20, 21 years old, and I went to went to see some summer league baseball games, and you were pitching in 85.
I was a coach of the team, yeah.
To me, you were like a hero because you played with the Cincinnati Reds, and you must have, in 85, how old were you?
34, yeah.
34,
yeah.
So you were pitching for them or coaching for them, yeah. And I'm thinking, here I am in Tucson, Arizona, watching Pat Darcy either coach or pitch, and I said, wow, this is kind of cool.
Well, yeah, I was going back to school, and so Jerry Kendall, you know, they had a summer team. So guys were going to stay in Tucson for the summer, going to school, and then some JC players. He said, "Why don't you coach? Can you coach our summer team?"
Oh, okay.
So I coached their summer team there at the, you know, we played over at Santa Rita Park. And
that's exactly where it was.
So it was weird going back to school after all that time.
Sure.
You know, you go back to school and you're trying to. I remember my first day. My wife graduated, you know, a long time before I did. And my first time going back to school, I have all my books with me. You know, she goes, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
And I said, "I'm taking my books. You don't take books to class."
You were what, in 30s?
Yeah, I'm in 30s. So I remember I'm lugging these books around. It's really hot. I'm going, "What am I doing?"
Who's that guy? Well, he's the geek guy.
He's some geek, brings all his books with him.
Yeah, this old man, beware. So that's cool. So you went to U of A.
Yeah.
And we got your degree in?
Political science and business, yeah.
Oh, that's, how's that gone for you?
Okay.
Good, right? Yeah. Good for you.
Tucson, so, Mesa, and then,
Okay, so let's go. You get your degree, you stay in Tucson, you come back home,
right.
Enjoy the fruits of being home, and you become a commercial real estate?
I was in commercial real estate, and then what kind of got everything going, I was on the Bernie Perlin at a mm-hmm. radio show. I came on as a guest, and he said, "Why don't you just stay on as a panel member?" So I was on that, and then when he passed away, I took over his show for a while. Then the station was sold. I think it's a Mexican station now. KT, 990. So anyways, I was on. I got picked the Cleveland Indians are going to announce they're going to leave.
Sure.
But they've done that in the past too.
That was like 92.
Yeah, 90 it was something. Like early 89, they announced they're going to. But they had done that announced before. So I'm on this committee. A bunch of people on this committee. I'm thinking, you know, they're going to stay. It was a big deal. And so I went over and I talked to their general manager, who was Hank Peters. And I said, "Are you not leaving? Are you? Yeah, we're leaving. They don't believe us. We're leaving." And the facility was so bad over there. It was, his office was underneath the grandstand.
Yeah.
And you had to lower your head to get in his office because then the bleachers he had kind of
I remember
up
that.
Like that.
I do remember
you had to
that.
Duck your head and get in his office.
Sure.
And the clubhouse was old and, you know, small. And I'm thinking, man. So I was in this committee. Well, I always stayed in touch with Bob Howell. He passed away. He was the president of the Reds. He was of St. Louis when they won the World Series. Mm-hmm. But he didn't like the new owner, Augie Bush, you know, telling him what to do. So the Reds gave him a full control. So he goes over there, builds a big red machine, and we always stayed in touch. So he was living in Colorado then. And so I called him up and I said, you know, the Indians are leaving. What should I do? And he said, "Well, why don't you start call all the teams west of the Mississippi River?" And he said, "Now there's a business group in Colorado, in Denver, that wants to get a baseball team. I'll follow that for you." I said, "Okay." So that next spring, U of A had first round NCAA basketball game there.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy calls me up from Colorado. I'm Roger Kinney. Bob Howelson said, "Nice to meet you. And can you meet me? I'm going to be on this tournament." Yeah. I said, "I'm going to the games too." So we get a place to meet. And he comes over and says, "Yeah, I'm with the Denver baseball group." And at that point, I became the point of contact with the city of Tucson and the Rockies.
Sure.
And so I was, you know, talking to their owners and back and forth. We flew back there a few times, things like that. And then the bad thing about it was the Indians had been there since 50 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the facilities were terrible. So their last year, we're all these plans, how we're going to fix everything up, you know, and they're going, "You know, you're doing all this stuff for them. You didn't think for us, you know, what the heck's going on here like that."
Sure.
And then they left, they went to Florida, then they came back later.
Sure.
But then, so we had, you know, the Rockies came here.
Yeah. The Rockies came here. Cleveland was, had just left, I think,
They eventually left. The next year.
Right. And then the Diamondbacks came in shortly after that.
It was Colorado, the D-backs here. They had three teams for a while. The White Sox here, too.
Yeah. And the White Sox, that was the third team. You were very instrumental in all that. And that's kind of when your political career started.
Well, I started meeting people, you know, politicians like that. And, if you say, "You should run for office," you're mm-hmm. like, "Well, I don't know if I'll do that." Yeah, you should try to run. Be good.
Well, the thing is, you're so mild-mannered. Mm-hmm. In your mind, you think politicians are kind of out there and kind of, you know, doing, mm-hmm. you're mild-mannered. I think that was one of your charms back in the day.
Yeah.
You were getting things done mm-hmm. without having to do it crazily, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Still today, the same way. I mean, still in how you handle yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tell me, in the late 90s, you were meeting all these people, movers and shakers kind of thing, you decided to run.
Yeah, I ran. I was a Democrat back then. Mm-hmm. And so,
but for mayor. For mayor.
I was, yeah. And so there were three other people running, three women running. And so I was a conservative, which was not good for Tucson.
A conservative Democrat. Okay.
Yeah, you're not going to be, you got to be a liberal in Tucson to be, to win an office here. So I just didn't, you know, I was the wrong, it was the wrong case because I was, you know, the neighborhood, you know, Molly McCaslin won that. Then she lost to Bob Walkup then. But this, it's, you know, for a Democrat, it's hard. So I'm an independent now. So yeah, but in Tucson, but Tucson's a pretty liberal town.
Sure, sure. Did you have a good experience through the whole thing?
It was interesting, you know, learning the things. The thing was interesting about it is you go to these different events and you start seeing the same people there all the time.
Sure.
You know, everybody, they all know everybody. They're like, come in there. I didn't know anybody. They're all, I start seeing, I've seen this guy at the other thing. He was at the other thing, you know?
Yeah.
The craziest thing was, You go to, they said you should go to nursing homes and talk to them. They'll bring everybody in, you know. So I said, okay. So I'm at this nursing home on Grant Road, and they had this like a big center area for the, you know,
for the people.
For the people to go. And so all these, they bring all these people in, you know, people walking, wheelchairs, walkers like that. And there's a lady sitting right in the front row, and she's got to be in her 90s, you know. So I'm talking, everything I'm saying, she's agreeing with, you know. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Yes, that's right. So afterwards, I said, that's pretty cool. You're speaking. I like that, you know, somebody saying that. So afterwards, I went over to say hi to her. She goes, I think you went to high school with my husband. I go, what?
And you were, what, 40? How old were you? 40?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm
like, yeah,
it's like, you were 49 or 48?
No, 40, yeah, I was like 45. I go, whoa, what? No.
How you doing?
Yeah, hey, yeah.
Hey, how you
I
doing?
I think you went to high school with my husband. I don't think so.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty. How you doing, man? So the experience didn't sour you, obviously.
No, I just, you learn a lot. You learn a lot about politics, how things go on and stuff like that, how things work. And that's, you know, it's interesting inside of that, how that's handled.
You were instrumental, at least vocally, on the placement of Keno. Of the new stadium.
Oh, I was against it, yeah.
Yeah, sure, sure. And I'm not sure how much time we have left for this, but we can kind of talk about that. A lot of people wanted it there, and a lot of people did not want it there. You were the did not want it there. And how do you think that turned out?
The problem was this, and I, you know, everybody said, oh, how did you know? How did you know she would tell? Well, other cities were already doing it. We weren't the first, you know, there are other cities, AAA teams, AA teams, major, were building things downtown, get people downtown.
Sure.
And so, we did the complete opposite, build out their Keno. So there's, even right now where the UVA plays at High Corbin, mm-hmm. you don't get the bang because everybody drives to the game, gets out, other car, goes to the game, gets in their car and drives away. No one walks. If it was downtown, sure. It makes you walk around and shop and eat something to eat. And we don't have that even now.
Right. No. And it's been criticized for a long time.
Yeah.
Now for its use in soccer and things like that, I guess the future is going to be even brighter because they have more plans for the area.
Yeah.
I guess long term now it's okay, but at the time it wasn't so okay.
Yeah, it is. It was a messed everything up. We still, I'm sure, have a AAA team here.
And, really?
Oh yeah, we'd have a AAA team. It was downtown, and we had at one time we had three major league teams here. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the problem was, if you're in the city, you got to think about what happens if somebody leaves. So we had the Rockies here, and we had the D-backs and the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
So White Sox leave, they went to Scottsdale. So we had two teams here. Well, the problem is they're both in the same division.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to play against each other all the time. They don't play against Charlie at all. And so they should have been trying to get another team that wasn't an American League team that wasn't – so they had to play each other.
Sure.
So they didn't want to – why should we play and our hitters, pitcher get to know each other too much
right.
like that? And so that was a key thing. You should have found somebody else, and they just kind of – they sat back. Yeah. Let everything go by.
Yeah. Okay. We'll transition from that to a break, and then we'll come back to see what your plans are in the future, what's going on, kind of like daily now. I know you're a very busy man. So, Bob, let's go to a break and come back here on KVOI 10:30 a.m.
Really in despair. plumbing problems? Call Picture Rocks Cooling, Heating, and Plumbing. Whether you have a leaky faucet, need a new water heater, or new plumbing construction, our qualified professional technicians can help you with your plumbing issues. Picture Rocks is family-owned and operated, and all our work is guaranteed. Call Picture Rocks Cooling, Heating, and Plumbing today at 440-4069 or picturerockscooling.com.
Picture Rocks Cooling.
Lexus of Tucson announces the newest arrival to its crossover family, the UX Urban Explorer. With a starting MSRP of just $32,000, the UX offers numerous active safety features and Apple CarPlay as standard features. The UX has the best turning radius, highest MPG, and lowest cabin noise of any crossover in its class. Get details and see it now at Lexus of Tucson. Experience amazing. Speedway in Columbus and at the Auto Mall.
My name is Sean Hoffline, your favorite peace-loving hippie with a pit bull, a ferret, and a love of life, liberty, and faith like few you've ever heard before. It's Blue Collar Radio from the heart. I will be live with you at 1 p.m. right here in the Perfection Auto Works studios at 1030 KVOI every single Sunday after America Armed and Free. We still believe here the fight for freedom is God's fight, and to fight for freedom is to fight alongside God. Pax Domini Tecum, thank you in advance for your valuable time.
I'm Dr. Cecilia Brewington. If you're among the 40% of Americans ages 50 and older who are still not getting tested for colorectal cancer, you're out of excuses. Under the Affordable Care Act, the federal government will now require nearly all private insurance companies to cover virtual colonoscopy and other less invasive tests. More importantly, these tests would be covered with no copay. That means there are now a number of fully covered colorectal cancer screening exams available. Please talk to your doctor to see which of these tests are right for you. Don't be one of the thousands of Americans to die from a largely preventable disease that is nearly always treatable if found early. The best test is the one that you choose to use. There have never been more fully covered options to fit your lifestyle and your schedule. Take action. Get screened for colorectal cancer. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones. For more information on virtual colonoscopy, please visit radiologyinfo.org.
Trusted local news and talk, AM 1030 KVOI. We have our eye on news.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera. Here on 1030 KVOI, I'm here with Mr. Pat Darcy, former Major League Baseball player with the Cincinnati Reds, now a local businessman, commercial real estate, a lot of things he does. I'll call him Slash as well. So now you kind of dealing with the city, and you're busy, and let's break some news here, possibly. You're thinking about running for mayor again?
People ask me about it now. I did, and a while back, now I'm getting a lot of people saying, why don't you run for mayor again? Mm-hmm. So, if I do, it's going to be quick, but I'm going to be an independent. I'm not a Democrat. And, Tucson's a tough town, if you're not a Democrat. But I think that, I grew up here, and I just don't like the way the town is now. Mm-hmm. The roads are bad. And
still bad, yeah.
Yeah, the roads are, they need to widen the roads. They need more left turn signals or left turn lanes, widen those. It's just the traffic's backed up. It's not Phoenix by any way, but still, it's pretty rough. And I feel it's a poor city. It's the most dangerous city. They voted the most dangerous city in Arizona. Mm-hmm. But you just go by and you see, every signalized intersection, somebody out, a homeless person, people walk with all their belongings. It's sad. It's really sad.
Yeah. I would assume that you probably are pleased with what you see downtown and how that's moving along with Rio Nuevo.
Downtown is doing very well. They put a lot of money into it, too. Mm-hmm, the tax money has really helped out.
Yeah.
But it's doing very well. But, some of that money hopefully will go out to fix the roads and turn the city around.
What would be your biggest concern or concerns?
It's just the time. Mm-hmm. But if you think you can make a change, you should try to do something like that.
Right, right. When will you make a final decision?
I have to be fairly soon. Yeah.
Sure. You up for it? I mean, it didn't take its toll the first time. Was it just a real time consuming?
It was tiring doing that. My kids were young, so. Mm-hmm. I was still coaching. I remember I was coaching like an all-star team, and We'd never won a game, you know. And so I think, I'm going to be quick. We'll be out of here. So we win. We win another game. Oh, no. I was hoping we were going to win, but I think, man, this is the first time we win a game, and I've seen right. all the stuff going on, too, you know.
Sure, sure.
But it was, I've done a lot of coaching, Little League, Pony League, I've done, soccer, stuff like that. So, yeah.
Sure, sure. Do you miss that? I'm sure every athlete who's a competitor loves to compete. Do you miss that, or you still do that?
No, I miss competing like that. I really do. And I wish we had had weight training more back then than we mm-hmm. did now, or, have somebody stretch you out and stuff like that, an instructor. We had none of that. We just went out and played,
Sure.
There was no health, there was no strength. You just went out, ran a couple, sprints and like that, and let's go.
You were ready to go.
Let's go get them.
You were based on your pure talent.
That was, that wasn't it. The Reds had, in 75, they had Nautilus weights. First time, the guy for Nautilus was from Florida, mm-hmm. and they had about Nautilus weights up there up in Tampa. And so we had these weights. Everybody had to work out twice a week, but mm-hmm. three times a week, lightweight for 2 weeks. After that, hardly anybody used it. So they bring all these Nautilus weights up to our clubhouse, out in a room outside the clubhouse. I think one or two guys used it.
I was going to say, they probably gathered dust.
So we win the World Series, and the Cincinnati Reds used Nautilus. And so everybody, we got to get Nautilus, too.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody used it,
Just like everybody else, they get clothes. Oh, I mean, they get dust.
That's their thing. They lift weights,
Right. It was kind of all a facade.
Yeah.
Facade. Do you kind of think that you were born in the wrong time?
I think anybody that was born, I was born at the wrong time. You played sports. 1 year, this money, if you made $100,000, you are a star.
Yeah.
And now it's just.
And
like,
that was reserved for Pete Rose.
Long-term contracts, the Reds would only give you a 1 year contract. They give you a non-guaranteed contract, but that doesn't mean anything. They could get rid of you any time.
Mm-hmm.
But, everything's just completely changed how the game is now. There's so much money into it. But it's a great game, more people are watching it.
Sure.
Because I remember going to some of these stadiums like Candlestick, hardly anybody's at the game, and, the fields weren't that good of shape, and now the fields are in great condition, and the fans are coming out, so it's good, yeah.
Who these days impresses you as a player? I'm sure you still watch a lot.
Oh, man. I watch some of the games out there. I like the guys that have fun playing. They act like they have actually having fun out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, the pitchers, there's some guys, most of these guys are the Giants, Bumgarner, I kind of like, he likes them. He's pretty tough and
sure.
like that. Throws like that. But just the guys that act like are having fun. I think a lot of guys do. Baseball is different than other sports. You could actually laugh and have fun during the game, stuff like that.
Sure.
What they're doing. These guys because you've gone through the minor league, the other team, you played against them or winter ball or something like that. So, yeah,
It's funny. I had Jerry Stitt, Coach Stitt mm-hmm. here and George Audius here last week, and we were talking about how baseball gets kind of a bum rap because everyone thinks it's boring. It's hardly boring. You're always thinking about going to happen the next play, especially if you're playing. If you're watching, I can understand that because there's little mm-hmm. action until there's action.
Mm-hmm.
You agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think they're even doing now. The hitters step out too much,
mm-hmm.
and there's too many times going back to the mound, pitching mound,
sure.
because they're making so many changes now. Five innings and you've done your job. You're out of there. And they got the other backup, a bunch of pitchers to back you up. So that just takes more time that way. Yeah.
What were you as a hitter? Because I assume that you took cuts for the World Series in that game if you pitched three innings.
Yeah. We hit that. We hit it then. And, in the minor leagues, we had a designated hitter a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Triple A, we had DH with Indianapolis. And so, but we took some batting practice. We just, we before the game got, one of the our backup catcher, though batting practice too, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's different than a game,
You're trying to be in it. You bunt a lot because you have to advance the runners, especially you guys.
Bunting's hard. these hitters go, you got to get a bunt. Then they do it. They can't do it either. No,
right.
So it looks it looks easy, but it's not. Yeah.
Who was the best player you played with?
Man, we had so many good players out there. I mean, Pete Rose was the most intense player.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't steal it. Everybody thinks he stole a lot of bases. He didn't. I think he had four bases at 75, something like that. He didn't steal a lot of bases. Didn't have a strong arm. Didn't hit for power. But he just willed himself to be a good player. He would go 3-for-3 and make an out and be mad.
Yeah.
Everybody else, I got 3 instead. He'd be mad. And he just battled all the time. And he started out as a second baseman. Then he moved to left field. And what turned our team around was he was an all-star left fielder. And so we had third base. We had third base that couldn't hit. And we kept changing them all the time. So Sparky said, at least it was like, I think it was in late May or June, he says, would you consider coming in to play third base? And it was a Sunday. We had an off day Monday. He said, sure. Pete said, sure. He didn't say, okay, give me more money. He said, I said, sure. So he moves into third base and put Foster in left field. So we had Griffey and Geronimo and Foster in the outfield. It turned everything around. But when you play third base, especially on Astro, that Astro, there was like a seat, like a freeway.
Yeah.
And you play there, you get rockets hit down to you. And he right there, he was ready to go.
Yeah, no, he was intense. What about, okay, so Pete Rose was the best player?
He was the most intense player.
Mm-hmm. What about best overall athletic?
Bish was an outstanding, he was solid. My first start in 74, somebody hit a chopper in front of the mound. My whole career, if I don't get that ball, it's a base hit. Before I get off the mound, he already had the ball.
Mm-hmm. And he had huge hands.
Oh, it is his reputation, though. So hardly anybody would run on him because he was Johnny Bench.
Right.
And so our backup catcher had a good arm, too, but everybody ran on him because he wasn't Johnny Bench.
Yeah, that's true. And then you had Griffey.
Yeah, Griffey. Our right fielder.
Did you meet, did Junior come?
Junior was a little kid. They had an older brother. They used to hang around, yeah.
Yeah, so he's, and then did you ever meet Trey when he was here?
I met Trey back there. I didn't meet him here, but I remember when I took my son out, when Junior was playing for Seattle, he came out. And Griffey and I were Griffey was a hitting coach for the Rockies back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had a batting cage on the other side of like the bleachers out in left field.
Behind Hart Corbett.
So I was talking to Griffey, and Ryan was with me, and he said, "Hey, I got to throw batting practice with Junior. I'm gonna work on things with him. So this spring training, so let's come over with me." So we're talking, and so Ryan was probably like my son. There was probably like 6 years old, and he had an older sister that played softball, you know. So Ken says to Ryan, he says, "Hey Ryan, how do you think Junior is hitting?" He goes, "Well, he hits better than my sister." but Junior, then we go back, you know, we have reunions.
Sure.
So we go back there quite a bit, and so we see those guys. You know?
Yeah, yeah. How are those reunions? Do the stories get more embellished?
It's pretty good. Yeah, we have a good time together. You know.
Sure. And nowadays with the TV, they go back a lot and replay those games and kind of get you in a room and talk about what happened or whatever. So you did do that in New York. They sent you back.
We've been back to New York, and we go back to Cincinnati. We're going to go back. This is some anniversary coming up. I got a letter, so we're going to go back. I've been going back probably like once or twice a year now. Mm-hmm. We're there. We go back for a few days, but it's Pete's. He's kind of still the same as it when you're with Pete. Whether you're in a restaurant or like that, somebody calls, "Hey Pete," he'll always say, "I've already got." Well, this is introduce you. This guy, that guy, like that.
Sure.
So and then
he still does have an entourage.
He has an entourage. He has an entourage, and Joe and Bench has a Bench is doing well and all this stuff. So yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun getting together all these guys, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm sure that everybody is a better ball player now than they were back then.
Everybody's much better. We didn't make the money, but we're much better.
Sure, sure. Who was the best guy? Best person?
Man, we had a lot of good people on the team there. I mean, it was just a good team. I mean,
sure.
Joe and I got along really well. I came from Houston, so he kind of took care of me a little bit.
Right,
came over
right,
there,
yeah.
So Joe was a good guy there. Billingham was, he's kind of kind of got a crazy sense of humor, but he's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete was easy to get along with. John, Tony Perez is a really good guy.
And who was maybe the toughest out you faced back in the day?
Man, there were the guys that just try to make contact. Larry Boa. Those guys that just don't try to. I tried to hit. I had a sinker ball pitch.
Sure.
So they would try to go with the pitch. They weren't trying to just kind of go with the pitch like that instead of trying to hit home runs.
Yeah.
So
and he was with the Phillies, I think. Larry Boa.
He was with the Phillies. And there was Schmidt. Couldn't make a mistake on those and him. And the Dodgers had Garvey. Those guys had some good players.
Sure. Those were good, the good old days of baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. How much did you enjoy going to the field those days?
Well, you got to get there early. If they say be there at 4:00, you're there at 3:30.
Yeah.
If you don't, they're gonna be mad at you.
But it was fun. It must have been fun because you guys were winning.
You drive. You got to get down the field. You play almost every day. They have a little more off days now, so we played almost every day. You go to the field and get ready, do your stuff, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Great career. Yes.
It was good. Yeah.
Even though it was short.
Yeah, it was good. Played that team, one of the greatest. Greatest team ever. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe it. I believe it. I was, a Cincinnati Red fan as a kid. Well, Pat, thanks for coming on in.
Okay, Steve.
It was great to see you. We'll probably do this again because there's so much to talk about.
Okay.
Had a lot of fun. That was Pat Darcy.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us here on Eye on the Ball. We'll come back on the second hour and just talk sports. Mm-hmm.